Welcome to the Stokecast, where each week we bring you an inspiring athlete, adventurer, or entrepreneur and dig into their stories and strategies for balancing work, life, and adventure while having fun and making a difference. I'm Jonathan Ronzio.
And I'm Emily Holland. Thanks for joining us today.
Let's get to it. Emily, do you play any instruments?
No. Well, I play the bass clarinet.
The bass clarinet?
Well, I started with clarinet, and then they relegated me to the bass clarinet, which was pretty rad because I was like first chair because there was only two of us.
When was this?
High school, man. I was a star of the band.
Wow. I didn't know this about you. Good for you.
Well, you also didn't know that I was in an a cappella group. Did you know that?
I also didn't know that.
So that was in college. So I'm really
I've peaked musically. It sounds like it. But downhill from here on out. Yeah. Well, so we were walking by a whole stand of ukuleles yesterday,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And you turned and asked me, like, would the ukulele be difficult, do you think? And you said that you wanted to maybe get one and play it.
Yeah, well, they're so pretty, too, that it's just, like,
they're cool looking.
Yeah.
And so my answer was yes, I do think, because my brother actually got me a ukulele when he went to Hawaii a long time ago. I play guitar, and I picked up the ukulele, and I tried to play, and it's very not the same as guitar.
Yeah, but so I don't have that background.
Right.
And I also, to you, I say challenge accepted, and maybe I'll try it, and I'll just be the next... Who's a famous ukulele player? I don't know. Probably our guest today. She's probably a famous ukulele.
She's a famous... So our guest today is Michelle Parker, who...
Transitions for days.
Right? So she does play the ukulele. We don't talk about that too much, but this just seemed relevant since we passed a whole stand of ukuleles yesterday.
So pretty.
They are. They really are nice. So I expect you to pick one up and learn to play it.
Yeah, next episode I'll have it down.
Perfect. Yep. You can do the intro. We'll get rid of the Stokecast intro music and it'll just be on ukulele.
No.
Yeah.
No, I won't. I won't.
That's the new challenge.
Okay. Challenge not accepted.
Okay. Well, so Michelle Parker is a professional skier. Her background is in ski racing, and then she did free skiing and is still sponsored by Red Bull and all sorts of brands. And she has a film coming out. She's been in lots of films. She's got a TV show coming out. Lots of things going on. But we had a really cool chat about the behind the scenes working of being a professional athlete, a professional skier. And Michelle kind of brings us through just the process of working with these brands, coming up with these ideas, pitching ideas, developing, bringing them through to fruition, like from inception to expedition to production.
Yep. And also, I mean, on top of all that, she's also doing good in the mountain. She's helping specifically women, but a lot of people just get more safe, have more safety awareness about avalanche territory and snow and all that good stuff that I have no idea about, but I need to take one of her classes, I guess.
For sure, yeah. So Safe As Clinics is what she does. She's an instructor with that and is dedicated to teaching women, to empowering women to be safe in the mountains. So
all good stuff.
You should sign up for a class.
I think
as you get more into skiing.
What she was talking about, I was like, "Yeah, it sounds rad. Sounds like you have great instructors, and I need to do that." So,
so it is really important right now. To I mean, the backcountry skiing movement is exploding.
Yeah,
that's the like fastest growing sector of the winter sport market is people wanting to go outside of ski resort boundaries.
Yeah,
and but too many people do it without.
Right.
Understanding the snowpack, understanding terrain traps, understanding like how to read layers of the snow and what's safe and what's not. And so so we really, really recommend everybody take, whether you're a woman and you find one of these Safe As clinics and you learn from Michelle or any of the other instructors, they have a pretty rad crew, or just, you know, find some airy classes or whatever. Like, understand snowpack before you go to the backcountry.
Yeah, absolutely. So enjoy this interview with Michelle Parker.
Okay, on the Stokecast, we've got Michelle Parker. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you for asking. How are you guys?
Oh, we're fantastic.
Great.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful day in Boston.
It has been a nice day. So let's dive right in, Michelle. You started skiing at one. That's crazy.
Like before I started walking, I guess, pretty much.
How does that happen? Can you explain a little bit about how you ended up getting on skis at one? I know that's not totally like your decision. You didn't walk out the door and put the skis on, but
she couldn't
walk. what does a 1-year-old skiing look like?
Yeah, according to my mom, there's a thing amongst her and her friends who all live in Squaw Valley, and they just all got their kids on skis before the age of two. So I think I was actually like 18 months old, and I don't really know how it went down. I'm assuming they held me up and I wasn't just like cruising on my own.
Put you by black diamonds.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was just a thing that they did growing up in this beautiful mountain town. And so my mom followed through with it. And I'm really excited because it's kind of fun to say you started skiing at the age of one.
It's ridiculous. I know. I taught snowboarding in Snowmass for a year, and I don't think I ever had anyone younger than three, but even getting them on a snowboard was outrageous. You can't do anything, but it's like, it's still really cool.
Yeah, totally. It's hilarious. I love seeing it on the mountain.
You probably look better at one than I did at 23 when I first learned to ski. So you're probably ahead of the game already. And growing up in Squaw Valley, I mean, you have some of the world's best skiers there, right? I mean, that grew up going to Squaw.
Yeah, absolutely. The place, it just kind of breeds world-class athletes, whether that's skiing, snowboarding, downhill racing, you know, all of the above. There's even ultra runners and professional climbers. And I think just this area in general attracts that because of the environment. We have, you know, endless trails to mountain bike on. We have beautiful and amazing mountains. And Squaw Valley in particular is like a pretty rare breed of a mountain, I'd say. As far as resorts go, there's a lot of accessible terrain that's kind of, you're able to test yourselves and push your boundaries. And another fun thing about Squaw is that all these amazing lines, like all these cliffs or, you know, a couple cliffs in a row or whatever it may be, are pretty well visible from the chairlift. So like for me growing up, some people consider it to be heckling, but it was like motivation for me when someone sees you from the chair and like you drop into a line. So that also, I think, had something to do with the upbringing of, you know, growing up in a valley like this. But yeah, racers and skiers and snowboarders alike, this place definitely is a little honey hole for that style of athlete.
So how early on did you know that, like, man, I absolutely love skiing and this is going to be what I pursue for my life?
That's a good question. I think, you know, at an early stage, obviously I started skiing when I was one, and then I just kind of grew up with the mountain being my daycare. Like I literally would take the school bus from school at like 12 o'clock and drop me off of the mountain and I would just ski. And I didn't really know anything different at that age, especially. And so I wouldn't say that I ever took that for granted, but I definitely, it was just the norm for me. Yeah, which is, I think that's a rarity. And we didn't have like the typical ski academy set up or anything like that. But I think, you know, I started racing and around the age of 15, I kind of broke off from the race program and started just like really enjoying free skiing and realizing that the mountain was like this endless playground of possibility. And it just became really fun. And I think I saw skiing in a bit of a new light and kind of took it on my own terms and decided that this was something that was my favorite sport and that I was going to treat it as such and never try and get too competitive with it or too serious about it, that it would take away the fun of it. And I think that's when I kind of recognized that this was like maybe something I wanted to pursue.
What other sports were you doing at the time?
I was actually really heavily involved with, like, gosh, just about every sport growing up. But at the time, soccer was my favorite sport and next to skiing. And I was really competitive with it. I was on, like, the state teams here in California and Nevada and definitely looked up to Mia Hamm a lot. She was, like, my childhood hero.
So rad. Yeah, so many of us.
Yeah, totally. I had her books, her posters. I would, like, go to the U.S. women's soccer games. It was really inspirational, I think, for me growing up. Having those, like, older female role models was amazing, especially at that time with the U.S. soccer team was, like, really kicking butt. But, yeah, so I kind of lost my train of thought there.
No, we were just talking about what other sports you were doing and like, well, kind of where I was going with that is it's often so hard, whether in the sport you're pursuing or in business, like to focus on the one thing and leave something else behind that you might love and like how you, you know, decided like skiing over soccer, right? Or anything else since.
Yeah. And to be honest, I've like thought about this and it was really like at that time and maybe it was my youth, but it was really like these ultimatums that I felt were being placed on me. Like with soccer, we were getting really competitive and my club coach was like, hey, you got to choose between skiing and soccer, because I'd be playing indoor in Reno from Tahoe. That's like an hour away. So my mom was like, I'd go skiing and then in the wintertime, like pick me up and drive me straight to Reno. And I would show up like maybe 5 minutes late, but always do my 100% best. And like, felt like I was a really big asset to the team, and I was like trying really hard to participate. But yeah, it was like this ultimatum that came down to like, you have to make the choice. And so since it was him, I think I kind of leaned towards skiing. I was like, all right, I'm going to ski. And then I was racing a bunch and starting to really enjoy skiing powder and skiing in the park and like not training as much probably. And my coach was like, look, like, I don't want you going in the park. I don't want you going upside down. I don't want you skiing with all these boys. Like, you've got to commit yourself. And I was like, all right, well, maybe I'm over with that too. And kind of just like paved my own way and like rebelled a little bit, I think, against like that like training regimen or that like seriousness. And like, I felt at the time it was an ultimatum, but maybe that was my age.
That is kind of, it seems like very strict of your coaches to be like, no, you have to, you can't be skiing with those guys. You got to just come to practice. It seems very stringent.
Yeah. And maybe my memory is failing me, but at like the age of 15 or even 13, when I had at like 14 for soccer, I was like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that like seriousness of the training and the race side of things, maybe that's why you started being drawn more towards the free skiing and really just like having the ability to create your own way, you know?
Yeah, it was just fun. We, you know, rather than like lining up at the top of the course and getting coached and stuff, which I loved as well, we were like lining up on the top of the jump and like coaching each other. And it was me and my peers. And there was this really cool energy to it. And it was just super fun. I was definitely attracted to that vibe on the mountain and like having the choice to go wherever I wanted. And yeah, I mean, I was 15. I was a teenager. I was like, I want to be on my own.
Yeah. So today you are a professional skier, but you also climb and mountain bike and fly fish and do all these things. You're into photography and I believe you play the ukulele, right?
Yeah.
So like, I mean, as we're talking about the necessity of giving up the one thing to pursue skiing and find success there, you know, how now fast forward do you balance like all these other pursuits with the life as a professional skier?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting lifestyle. And I guess like the job aspect of it is like you're your own boss. So you have to be diligent and on top of yourself to like work as much as you want to work. And it's being self-employed as well. It's like you can work as much as you want. And there's always something that you can do to be benefiting your career. And then in the wintertime, you know, this year I was basically not home from December until May. And so being on the road so much, you kind of have to live this lifestyle of like still being productive, but you're also faced with a lot of downtime. If it's bad weather, you're like, you're stuck inside and you can't go out in the mountains and film and, you know, do that aspect of the job. So with that downtime, like there's always time to, you know, do computer work and whatnot, but you finish that and you're like, well, I could learn an instrument now or, you know, practice my Spanish. And being in the field that I am in, I feel like I get to travel the road with a lot of creative people and photographers and filmmakers and people who are conceptualizing stories and producing. And so my job entails a lot of that as well. Like this last year, I worked a lot on the logistics and production side of a web series that I'm working on with Red Bull. Called Originate, and that'll be out this fall in September. And but so that's just another example of how you can kind of dive into these other aspects of the job, and it really helps you to become pretty well-rounded. And then you're building so many awesome connections in the industry too. It's like kind of an exciting thing to have these doors opened up and time to like pursue other things, but it also keeps you highly busy too. I was just like talking about it with my boyfriend. He's a professional photographer on the snowboard side. And it's kind of interesting because our work is very seasonal. And for him, he can pick up plenty of work in the summertime if he chooses to. But like I was pinned from, December till May. And then I get home and all of a sudden you're like, the projects are relatively complete. And all you're doing is giving feedback on edits and stuff like this and filling in work where you want to. But it's very seasonal. And there's not always something that's keeping you going necessarily unless you're like self-motivating. So I think it's important to like open up your mind and try to exercise that all year long and like use the time that you have to be productive. And that's kind of helped me to maintain that like forward thinking and like positive attitude, I guess, and just in general happiness. like always being busy with something.
I love that. Keeping yourself busy, but in a really productive way. So speaking of kind of breaking out into the industry and being a pro skier, obviously you have sponsors and you have people that you're working with on these projects for these different TV series or for some of the films that you've been in. So how has that been? I mean, moving through that space and gaining sponsors and navigating those relationships for those who potentially want to do that or are interested in how that process works. How does that go down?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing with everyone's separate paths to becoming professional, like extreme athletes, whether that's climbing or skiing or snowboarding. I don't think I've heard the same thing twice. Like everyone has their own unique story. So, you know, back in the day, it would be like you go out and you film like a little promotional video and you send it off to sponsors. And for me, I got really lucky and I was skiing park at Squaw one day and this guy came up to me and he handed me his business card, which I still have and I'll never get rid of it.
Framed.
And he was the owner of Lion Skis. His name was Jason Leventhal. And he was like, hey, I wanted to give you this card. If you're looking for a sponsor or you'd be interested in competing, I'd love to sponsor you. And so he kind of took me under his wing, and just by like being at this resort and seeing me ski. And so I got really lucky. And at the time, to be honest, like I was looking up to these female soccer players, but there wasn't that many female skiers that were getting a lot of media coverage, I think, because there was like a handful of them, but they weren't in my face. Like I wasn't seeing that. And I was like, you know, looking for that too. And So I didn't really look at it necessarily as being like a full-time job opportunity. Like I was like, this is my passion and I'm pursuing it because I love it and still am to this day. But at the time I wasn't certain that being a professional female skier was like an actuality. And so I got really lucky in that way that it fell into my lap and I just said yes to the opportunities and continued to, you know, kind of shape my way and then had some older mentors that would give me advice here and there. And I think that, yeah, ultimately like in this day and age, competing can be a great way to get sponsored or get noticed. And yeah, creating online content, like videos go viral pretty quick if it's worthy. And then like, I also like to think of it, like I have a lot of younger kids that'll hit me up and be like, hey, I'd love to work with this company that you're working with. And kind of in my way of mentoring might be to reach out to them and be like, okay, I'd be psyched to recommend you. Can you give me a little outline of like your goals and like the steps that you're going to take to pursue those goals and how you can be an asset to this company too, because my word is, you know, if I tell my sponsor that this kid is really good and worthy, then I want to make sure that they are for sure. So giving them a little direction on that way as well. And I think that if you approached a company and they're very approachable, there's a team manager that works for every company and get their contact and then reach out to them and kind of have like, this is what I'm doing. These are my plans. This is what you'll get out of it. And this is why I want to represent your company. I think that's a pretty good way to go about it. But a lot of it is like knowing people and getting recommended and reaching out to those people. And yeah, being stoked too, that helps. Being a good person for sure helps in this day and age.
I love how process and productivity driven you are. Like, I think that there's a stigma about maybe less so today, but I believe, you know, generally in our industry, there's a stigma about skiers or professional extreme athletes that that has been perpetuated over time, that we're, you know, just professional fun havers and in the moment, like just that's all you care about is like having fun and doing it. But like, I love how much you're thinking about the next steps and being productive along the way and working hard and thinking through those goals and challenges. And it's so refreshing that we're seeing more and more of that from people pursuing these careers.
Yeah, I think you have to be in this day and age. You know, social media has opened up so much opportunity for an athlete to represent themselves and to tell their own story. And I think that, you know, companies, you can work with them. You might, like, there's a lot of opportunity for people who are just, like, really good at social media or at coming up with rad ideas and trip ideas and stuff and pursuing them. And but really ultimately, like, we do have a job and it's important to fulfill that job, and that is ultimately to represent these companies and to sell their product. And, you know, cut and dry, that's what it is. So how do we do that? And this job is like, it's such a blessing, and we are professional fun havers. It's, I wouldn't trade it for anything. Yeah, but on top of that, there is responsibility, and I think it's good to continue to evolve too. I've seen so much like of the industry change in the 15 years that I've been a professional skier for. Like, there's been a lot of changes, and it's been fun to adapt to that and to try to stick with the times and recreate yourself. And alongside that, like, my passion in skiing has changed, and I think that's helped me to stay relevant as well as I've gotten, you know, deeper into this industry.
So in what way has your passion changed?
Well, like, for example, I started out racing, and then, you know, I wasn't getting paid at that point, but I had sponsors, and then I switched over to slopestyle and halfpipe, and that's when my first, like, real sponsors started to happen. And then from there, I kind of always knew with my racing background and growing up in squaw that I wanted to film. And so I started big mountain skiing, and with that comes the responsibility of learning about avalanche awareness and education and how to travel safely in the backcountry. And then once I started learning all of that, I got into climbing at a simultaneous time. And I, you know, with all those rope skills and stuff, I was like, whoa, like, you know, climbing up mountains is really fun too. So more backcountry, like, human approach stuff started to happen. And then with that, I've started to get opportunities open up with, like, I don't know, going on human powered, like, more expedition style trips up to Alaska. So you maybe get dropped off by a plane and then you're camping for a few weeks and you have an objective or a goal or a place that you're trying to ski a bunch of lines. So, you know, my path has taken me down many different aspects and roads of skiing, and it's been, like, ever evolving and ever changing. And I think that's kept my interest and enthusiasm really high. And that's kind of a cool thing about our sport too, is there's a lot of different paths to take.
So what is, let's see, just top of mind, one of the wildest expeditions that you both had to prepare for and, like, just be part of?
I think that two of them last year was really, like, I would say the first two truly human powered expeditions that I've gone on, and I went on them back to back in Alaska. And the first one, we went to this place called the Kachatna Spires, and it's in this seldomly visited area of Alaska, outside of Talkeetna. It's in the Denali National Park, but just on the border. And we kind of just went out there. We hadn't had any records of too many, like, ski mountaineers going out there, actually any. We checked with the park and we did our research, and we're like, this might be a pretty cool zone to go explore. We'd seen a bunch of pictures in, like, more alpine climbing journals and stuff like this. And so it was Chris Davenport who found the spot, and we went out there and kind of just, it was really exciting to think that we may very well have been some of the first skiers to have skied a lot of these lines. And I say that I don't really like claiming, like, a first ascent or anything like that. But I think that that could be possible on this trip. And that was, like, definitely a part of the excitement of being there with the crew that I was with. And, yeah, that one was kind of the first true expedition of my, time as a professional skier. And that was a really exciting trip to be on. I was with, like, basically three of my favorite and biggest mentors in my life right now, currently. And that was, extra special to get to be in the mountains with them, some of my best friends for sure. And then right after that, we went to Denali, and that was purely a vacation. Like, me and a bunch of professional skiers were like, we want to go climb and ski this mountain. And we didn't have, like, a photographer or videographer or sponsors or anything like that helping us. It was just like, let's go do it on our own because it'd be awesome. And then it was in July. It was, like, almost into July when our expedition ended, and we were like, whoa, we were hashtagging at Denali summer vacation. And we're like, we should go to the beach right now. Like, we ski all winter all over the place. But it was, like, so fun to go there just purely out of passion to explore a new area and go skiing with these other professional skiers. It was really awesome.
For sure. That is rad. So, actually last, June, from June 5th through, I want to say the 20th, I was on Denali as well.
Oh, epic. Yeah. I bet our paths crossed.
We probably passed you on the way down to base camp when you were on your way up. But yeah, it was same thing. I just, me and a few friends just decided to go on a split board expedition and just go do Denali and have a blast. And, what a mountain.
Yeah. I was on the beach during that time.
Good for you. Yeah. Cool. Did you guys, snowboard off the top?
Did not snowboard off the top. Ended up riding from the fixed lines and then back down. But we had a few mishaps along the way with some team members, and then the weather window being a little tricky on the upper ridge line. So we unfortunately didn't make the summit. But I'm looking at it for next summer.
Dang, oh no!
Yeah, yeah, because the weather was terrible before we got there.
Yeah,
like heinous. Yeah. And then we got there and it opened up and we were like on and off the mountain in 9 days total, I want to say.
Yeah, I know. So I'm sitting there having like a pizza and a beer in Talkeetna after getting off and like kissing dry, you know, dirt again. And literally those like next couple days, the weather was just perfect. And I think that's when probably you guys were going for the top. So it's such is life, you know, on those types of trips, right?
Oh man, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was like looking at the weather and I'm like, I'm leaving this beautiful Lake Tahoe summer weather to go up there and it's like negative 50 at 17,000 feet. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I was all stressing it, but then it was awesome.
Yeah, it was wild. But it's addicting.
Yeah, is it? Okay. I'll trust that once I go on my first big expedition.
So you mentioned you have this series coming out in the fall. You said Originate on Red Bull TV. So what's the concept of that?
Well, I've been in touch with this production company based out of Squamish for about 3 years now, or 4 years. And we've kind of been talking about doing a series together and conceptualizing different ideas and pitching them to Red Bull, and this year they bit and they were psyched. And so I feel really fortunate to have gotten the opportunity. And we basically, like, you know, as winter goes, you're never totally 100% with weather and locations and if you're going to hit it or not. So we kind of adapted as the season went on, but every episode will be like 10 minutes long and they kind of each tell their own story about the locations that we went, how we were accessing the terrain, or, you know, what we were doing. And but they're really well put together. There's more of a storyline and thread than most edits that I've seen come out online, and like beautiful cinematography work. And we went to Whistler, Japan. We went to Chamonix, but got shut down pretty hard. We went to the interior of British Columbia, to Alaska, really all over. And yeah, I'm excited. There's like kind of a different thread to every episode, I would say.
That's awesome. So in pitching those concepts to Red Bull and just in general, like, what does that look like working with a production company, you being the athlete who's putting it forward and helping with logistics, I imagine? Like, what does that process look like from an athlete perspective?
Yeah, so that's like a part of the job behind what people see in the media, I guess. And that would be like, you know, right now I'm like thinking of different concepts on what I would want to do with this production company, the storyline and the creative. And we're kind of working together to brainstorm that and then pitching it probably in August to whatever company we choose to pitch it to. But this would be Red Bull for sure. And so kind of just brainstorming, and it's really an exciting process of like, you know, we're creating entertainment and, you know, different TV shows essentially for them. And so thinking of storylines that might hit a bigger demographic than the core community of skiers and telling a story. And I think that's something that we tried to focus on pretty heavily. But I've never really done that before with skiing. Like, we've been so action driven. So it was kind of cool to like think about locations and then what storyline we could create about that. And yeah, this year was like a really busy year for me. I worked with Matchstick and Red Bull. So there was a lot of, you know, just trip planning and like choosing the athletes and the location and then booking your travel accommodations and all of that takes so much time and really nailing it in and hoping that it all works out. And then, you know, come January and there's not snow where you're supposed to go, you pull out of that trip and you have to think like really quickly and come up with a trip on the spot and like basically pull it together within 3 days to go get it. So being mobile and stuff, it's just a lot of logistics, a lot of communication.
So you mentioned working with Matchstick as well. Is that coming out around the same time? What is that one?
Yeah, absolutely. That one is called All In, and that movie originally started as we had, like, the cast would be Ingrid Backstrom, Tatum Minode, Angel Collinson, Elise Sogsted, and myself. And then we kind of, like, pitched the story actually originally to Red Bull and then matched it, caught wind of it, and they approached us, and they're like, we would love to produce that. We'd be really psyched. So a lot of the year, that was an opportunity for me to get to ride with other women. And I think in this movie, we have equal parts of, you know, there'll be equal parts female segment to male segment, which is the first of its kind in ski action filming, I'm sure of it. So we're really excited about that. And it just gave us the opportunity to ride together. Like, Angel Collinson's been one of my best friends for a while, and we've never skied together until this year. And so that was really special. And it's hard to put into words what that means when you're out in the mountains, but basically it just motivates me like way more than when I'm skiing with a group of guys, to be totally honest. Like, I can relate to the women and what they're doing out there so much better than when I'm checking out what the guys are doing. And so with confidence building and just like, I think really pushing your own limits, and it's really inspiring when you see Elise huck a huge cliff and then you're like, okay, I want to go do that too. And as opposed to like, if I see Cody, Elise's husband, huck like this massive cliff, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I don't think I can do that. Or like, I don't know if I should try that. Or like, there's all these questions. But like, when there's other women around you and you just push each other, like, I think it really brings out the best in all of us in the mountains. And it was so fun to get to work with them out there.
That's awesome. So in creating those spaces, I guess, for more women to be in groups in the mountains like that, can you talk a little bit about SafeAz and how that came about, and what kind of work it went into putting that together?
Yeah, for anybody listening who doesn't know what SafeAz is, please give us the full acronym.
Yeah, talk about it, you know, describe it, give us the acronym.
I like feel like I have to look up the full acronym. I get confused sometimes. That's not good. Anyways, yeah, SafeAz was started, I want to say, 6 years ago. And it was basically happened right around after the Stevens Pass avalanche occurred in Washington. Yeah, and Elise Sogsted was a part of that avalanche. She was one of the survivors that was caught in the avalanche. And we kind of were all just debriefing and talking about that and communicating. And it was after yoga, we were drinking coffee, and we were like, man, we want to like create a space for women particularly to come together and get educated. So SafeAz, the acronym, is Skiers Advocating and Fostering Avalanche and Snow Safety. And it's a clinic that we host. This is our sixth year doing it. Originally, it started out for women, and we just wanted to create a space where it felt really encouraging. Like, oftentimes women are outnumbered in the mountains, in the outdoors, and we just wanted to bring them together and be like, hey, like, rather than being, you know, a 10-to-1 ratio in an avalanche course, like, you can start out here and then hopefully like guide them to take their first avalanche course, and not be reliant on others in the mountains and kind of own that space in the mountains and being a team member. And that's super important with what we do when we're traveling in the backcountry. You know, one of the biggest dangers of what I do is avalanches. And that's just to break it down. It's like snow study and really understanding what the snowpack is doing and the weather. And a lot of that comes down to group dynamics and human factors is what they call it in avalanche safety. And so being able to teach that and spread that knowledge is really important. And I think it's really cool. We have, you know, myself, Ingrid Backstrom, Jackie Peso, and Elise Sogsted are like the four professional skiers that are hosting this. And we all have our individual stories to talk about and to teach. And then we have a lead avalanche instructor, Lel Tone, who's absolutely amazing. And she is ARRI certified and teaches all the courses, like the basic curriculum, I guess you would say. And then we kind of add to that. And it's a pretty intense one-day clinic. And the last 2 years, we've also added like men and women in one class together. And that's been really fun too, because sometimes you'll get like a dad and his wife and his two daughters, and they want to go backcountry skiing together. They all want to be on the same page and take the course together. And you have the daughters who get to take it from, you know, maybe some of their skiing idols, and then the parents are together. And it's been really cool to teach others and to spread something that we feel like is really important, and to kind of, you know, let people know that it's cool to take an avalanche course. It's like really cool and you should totally do it. And yeah, just generating that encouraging space for women in particular and men to come together and learn about something that we think is, you know, could save your life.
For sure. That's the definition of meaningful work.
Yeah, seriously. And just, I think, seeing yourself in, like you were saying before, when you were growing up and you didn't really have female, I guess, role models within the skiing space or within the outdoor adventure space or any available women to look up to. Like, this, it's super important to have those role models. And I think that recognizing a lack of them and just doing something to combat that is amazing. So that's awesome. And how can people come or get signed up or learn about them?
Yeah, we have a website. It's www.safeasclinics.com. And we also have social media at safeasclinics on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And basically, like right now, we're kind of wrapping up our past season, but all the clinics are hosted in December, and around November, sometimes October, we'll start releasing the clinic dates and locations. Typically, we try to squeeze in as many as we can, but we're all pretty busy. So we do about 6 per year. We've done them in Washington, Utah, Colorado, and California. And we're definitely like looking to expand this. But for now, that's like as much as we can manage. And that's been like another aspect of my job that's been really exciting. It's like, you know, always staying busy with positive and productive things like we were talking about earlier. In the fall time, like that's much of my time is devoted to creating these clinics. And a lot of that is, again, just like you're hosting an event. So it's fun to dabble in different aspects of this career and find what you're passionate about.
Yeah. So how have you found it kind of bridging that gap from like you as the business and you know, pursuing that career as like being the adventure athlete to actually having a business beyond your personal brand, I guess? Like, is it a natural progression? Has it been pretty easy? Or, you know, going from athlete to entrepreneur, or has it been, I guess, connected throughout the way?
I think you build so many amazing relationships and contacts in what we do. Like, it's really fun to put it to work and come up with something that either you think is meaningful and that you can really get behind. Like, this clinic is something that we're all really, really passionate about. And so that was like an easy, yeah, we can do this. And then like, yeah, it was a learning process to get from, you know, even about insurance and thinking about all these things that come along with hosting a clinic that you're doing something active and it's on the hill and stuff. So yeah, it was a bit of a learning curve, but now we've got it dialed down to a system pretty well, and it still takes a lot of work, but it's really fun, and you get to work with your friends and everything, so that's fun. But I guess like I was just inspired by all the other athletes that are doing this similar things, whether that's starting a company like Cody Townsend started Arcade Belts, or you know, all these different athletes are very much, they have their fingers in fun different activities, and I think that yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's really like there's endless opportunity to either make a difference or pursue your career and push it in other realms of what we do today. Like there's other skiers that have like started their own production companies and now they're doing major commercial work. So there's really, there's endless opportunity with what you're passionate about and pursuing it in what we do, I think.
It's amazing how creative the people in our industry are.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it goes hand in hand, the drive for anybody who is that passionate about experiencing the outdoors and like taking that step to find your freedom and your confidence within it kind of just aligns on a I guess mental level to different aspects of your life on a creative basis for your, you know, personal and professional outlets.
Yeah, totally. And initially, like when I first became a professional skier, I remember being like, well, you know what? Like, I want to do something bigger. I want more of a purpose to come along with this career. And how can I use my voice to, you know, whether just to be a positive influence on younger ladies or on everyone to be outdoors, or, you know, whether it's talking about climate change and going to Washington, D.C. to talk to senators and congressmen, or, you know, making a difference locally or with different philanthropic endeavors. I think that we have such a platform and such an opportunity to do so. It would be a shame to see that go to waste.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with social media, like you mentioned before. So speaking of doing some outdoor advocacy, so how did you get involved with that? What was the progression from, like Jonathan said, athlete to entrepreneur to being involved in that on the Hill? And then how can other people get involved and how do you recommend to your friends or peers?
With things like Protect Our Winters or?
Yeah, like outdoor advocacy efforts.
Yeah. I think, you know, naturally being an outdoor athlete, it would be a shame not to care about our environment. And Protect Our Winters is an amazing organization. They're a nonprofit and started by Jeremy Jones, who's been a longtime hero and friend of mine. And you know, I think he just wanted to do something about it. And he, within the last, I want to say they're at least 10 years old, has really shaped this nonprofit to be a guiding light for a lot of people. And whether you're a professional athlete or not, they, if you go online to protectourwinners.org, I believe it is, there's a full roadmap of how to get involved and what you can do. And a lot of what we're seeing and what they've been seeing success with is with local and small governments. So there's a lot that we can do as individuals, as citizens, to better the environment. And one of that is, one of that ways is to reach out to our local government, to your congressman or senator, and to voice your opinion, whether that's by phone or in person. Go to your town hall council meetings, you know, lobby and get involved and use your voice. And I think that's, like, they've really helped us by giving us a roadmap and teaching us and guiding us, and kind of, you know, if there's something that we're passionate about, we can bring it to them and they can help promote it within their channels and stuff. And it's really just a group of like-minded individuals that want to learn as much as we can to help and spread that message. And it's like, it's been really cool to see some of the change that we've been able to generate. And I think that it can be a very overwhelming thing to think about and to, you know, communicate with each other about, but it's certainly, the time is now. And I think it's in our best interest to use our voice and come together on that issue for sure.
So between everything you do in the advocacy world, and then your, you know, adventure pursuits and Safe As, and then just, you know, having fun with friends and family, like, how do you feel about the balance in your life, like the way that you prioritize the things that you do and how it stacks up?
Yeah, that's something that I think we're all constantly seeking, is that perfect balance, right? It's like, yeah. It feels like it's the never-ending question.
Where is
right,
it?
Right. Like, and it may not exist. I mean, we get some very varied responses to this. Like, balance is difficult, if not impossible, to achieve. But what it can mean something very individual to you. And I don't know how you feel about the things that you do.
I think on a daily basis, for me, I know a few things that make me tick and that help me to maintain that mental clarity and or balance. And one of those is getting active outside. And if I don't have that, I notice that for sure in a day. So I kind of try to stay on top of that. And I would say that's, like, probably the biggest thing that gets my wheels turning. And then that creates space for creativity and to think of other things that you want to pursue. And I think it's easy to feel quite lopsided in seasonal work. Like, I ski all winter, and then all of a sudden the summertime, I really have to stay motivated and on it with myself to, you know, create more opportunities or to continue to maintain my health and wellness and whatever that may be. So I'm kind of always seeking balance. And especially as you get older, things start to change and there's more responsibility and stuff like that. So it's an interesting thing to always be seeking. But I think, yeah, just staying active and having purpose is really important.
Do you map out, like, goals and challenges and to-dos and all that kind of stuff, or like, have a meditation routine, or like, what kind of things do you do to keep you, like, you know, in addition to just being active on a daily basis outdoors, like, how do you keep yourself, I guess, motivated in those different aspects?
Yeah. I definitely have to-do lists and I try to check those off. And one thing, like, I'm not much of a physical, like, I write my goals down, but I definitely create goals. And then that helps me to stay really motivated. My most recent goal that'll happen on Saturday was signing up for a bike race, and it's a road race. And it's, like, probably the biggest ride I've ever done with the elevation gain and distance. And so that's kind of motivated me. I've found in the summertime, if you sign up for these events, you better show up prepared. And so that's motivated me to stay physically fit. And it's just really fun too, to kind of chase down those goals. And then on the other side of things, I think that something that makes me tick is being creative and just trying to figure out different ways of, you know, helping the brands that I work with to be successful, and also doing things that I'm passionate about. So, like, a little side project that I'm starting to conceptualize is to create a book. And I shot a lot of film last year, so that's something that I'm really excited about. I have like 9 more roles to develop, but I'm excited to kind of put those down on paper and then thinking about like ways to execute that. And, you know, all the profits would go to protect our winners and trying to tell a different story through my eyes in an artistic way and something that people can have that's tangible and it's fun to flip through and it brings people joy. And it's not like a magazine that you might chuck. It's like something that you're stoked to have. And it's from, I don't know. I think that like, these different pursuits are pretty fun to think about. And that like motivates me on a daily basis to work towards that.
Yeah. So it just seems like you're always cooking up something new. I mean, when you said film, I thought you were talking about like, you know, video and then you're like developing film. And I was like, oh, okay. Got it. That's awesome. And that could be a good addition to anyone's library, I'm sure. And also, that stuff is stuff that you go back to when you want to get inspiration for like next trips and next expeditions. So it'll just keep perpetuating people to go outside.
Yeah, totally. And then like music is so fun as well.
Yeah.
My boyfriend's an incredible guitarist. And so we've been playing a bunch and that's become like another side goal that's like fun to work towards. And like, I think all of these things kind of tap into a different aspect of my brain and make me tick and make me motivated and stoked.
It all feeds into the next, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So looking back at your, I guess, personal and professional career, are there any specific like definitive moments along the way or setbacks that, you know, you overcame that you credit to, you know, giving you the creativity, the confidence, the whatever it is that you embody today?
Yeah. And most of those, to be quite honest, have come in the form of injury. I've had 3 major knee injuries, which are a total of 5 separate surgeries. And each one of those injuries, I would say, has taught me like huge lessons and has also given me the opportunity to explore, you know, different aspects of life. With one injury, I remodeled my house and picked up the ukulele. With another injury, I went to college because I hadn't been in a long time and I wanted to learn. And like, they've all been very clear, like, lessons in life too, like how to treat your body right, both physically and mentally. And yeah, I don't know. Most of those setbacks have been quite difficult at the time, but to be honest, I don't regret getting injured and I don't not wish that any of that happened. It all taught me these beautiful life lessons and so much good came from those dark moments.
The silver lining and the setback.
Yeah, totally.
That's the title of the episode now. I like it. Well, thinking about not getting injured moving forward or, you know, being a well-rounded mountain athlete, like what are the key things that you make sure to include in your training regimen to be able to, you know, ski all winter, climb and mountain bike all summer, and everything in between?
I think that just staying physically fit and that's, for me, I have a tough time going to the gym, to be perfectly honest. Maybe preseason for like a month, I'll be able to get in there when it's raining out or something like that. But
yeah.
Love to mountain bike. I love to climb and I love to hike and use my entire body to be physically active and pretty well in tune with, you know, small injuries and what that might be correlating to. And so just taking care of my body. And a lot of that is through, yoga and positive thinking and trying to maintain a really clear head and that balance that we're constantly seeking. But, And I think, you know, it's interesting because my life is really spontaneous. And you asked earlier about like rituals and do you meditate or like, how do you do these things? And I would say my life is so spontaneous that I don't find that I have too many rituals other than really like positive thinking and putting out what you want to take in and being aware of that and trying to live really consciously. And I think for me, that means like living in the present. And for me, it's also, I think, maybe easier to live in the present because I never know what I'm going to do in a week. Like, it's hard for me to plan that far out. And my daily schedule is all over the place. So it's pretty fun and spontaneous. And that kind of forces me to live in the moment. And I think that's something that I am constantly, like, seeking and find that it's something that's yeah, it's easy to do when you're skiing, that's for sure.
Totally. So to challenge the live in the moment mentality for a second, I just want to pose this question, and there might not be an answer to it, but if you look back at like the 15 years of being a professional skier, and you reflect on that and how far you've come and how your passion has grown, and now you have, you know, things like Safe As Clinics and POW. What if you're looking at the next 5, 10, or 15 years of your life as a professional skier, or you know, everything else that you are? Like, do you have a vision for where you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question that, like, everyone asks, and it's hard to see into the future. I think I'm a pretty darn passionate person, and I can find joy in doing a lot of different things. And I've always said that to myself, and I've always believed that thoroughly, so that, you know, if the rug did get ripped out from under my feet with an injury or whatever that is, I think that I'd be able to pursue something like passionately other than skiing. But having said that, like, I definitely want to continue to ski and live the life that I have right now for as long as I can. And I think that could stretch much farther than 5 years. And I think that with the way things have evolved, like, there's so much more that can be done from myself as an athlete and moving forward, growing as a skier and as a person too. And as kind of a representative of skiing, I think that there's, like, yeah, the possibilities are truly endless. And so for me, that would mean to continue to safely develop my skills in the mountains and to go after, you know, different goals that I have within the realm of skiing. And some of those might be 5-year goals, to be quite honest. Like, there's one of them that I'm like, well, that could take 5 years, which is really long term, but exciting to think about. And, you know, other things like this photography book or whatever it may be are more short term, but I think could open up the door for different possibilities down the line. But I think just honing in those skills that I am really truly into, and that would be, yeah, photography and storytelling through my eyes, and skiing and developing you know, meaningful places for people to learn about avalanche safety, or, like, you know, meaningful things within my career. And I think that's constantly developing as well as I get older.
Yes. Awesome. I just am taking it all in.
are you willing to share the thing that might take 5 years?
Can't do it.
Can't do it? All right. I understand that.
So, yeah, it's her thing.
That's all
good. We'll hear about it in 5 years, maybe less. Who knows?
Hopefully. Yeah, hopefully.
Well, that's awesome. So one thing that we try to ask all of our guests, Michelle, is how do you define stoke?
I feel like I use that word so much. Like,
us too.
Yeah, totally. Stoke, man, this, like, ever-burning flame within that exudes from the person that has it. And it's fueled by passion, I would say, for the most part, and the desire to have fun.
Emily's heart is melting over here.
I love that. You fuel spoke to the from core. Within. I was like, yes, yes, please keep going.
That was fantastic. Awesome. So let's figure out how anyone can, you know, keep up with you and your story and where, you know, Originate's going to drop on Red Bull TV in September, right? And
yep.
All In is going to drop by Matchstick. Probably hitting some theaters, right?
In September, yeah, world premieres and all the premieres after that. We'll be traveling around with that movie, so it'll be fun to meet anyone who's listening.
Great.
Amazing. And then where do you like to hang out on social?
I would say I'm most active on Instagram, and that would be at Myshell Parker, MYSHELLPARKER. That's not how I spell my name, but it's a good alternative because Michelle Parker was taken.
Awesome. Love it. Cool. And then you said it was safeasclinics.com, right?
Yep, exactly.
Perfect. Well, those are all the spots where you can catch Michelle and everything that she's got going on. We'll also put all those links in the show notes on exploreinspired.com/stokecast.
Awesome, guys.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and we're really excited to see the TV show and the film coming out shortly.
Yeah, keep spreading the stoke. It's such a good thing.
Hashtag share the stoke. Awesome. Well, thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, guys.
what an awesome chat with Michelle. She was great.
So rad. Such a rad lady, Michelle Parker.
Michelle Parker. So yeah, speaking of that, all the links that were mentioned in this episode, all the ways to connect with Michelle or to discover what's going on with Safe As Clinics or her show and movie coming out shortly, you can get all of that on the show notes at exploreinspired.com/stokecast, as well as all the show notes from every past episode. You can dig into everyone that we've interviewed if you haven't yet.
Speaking of, you should also subscribe so you don't ever miss an episode. And also, if you like what you're hearing, rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you listen to us on. Thanks so much for following along.
Yeah, our favorite reviews are going up on exploreinspired.com/stokecast. So get yours in on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and maybe we'll pick yours to feature on the site and maybe give you a little shout out on a future episode.
Who knows? Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Emily Holland.
And I'm Jonathan Ronzio. We'll catch you next week with another episode of the Stokecast.